Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
What in the world is happening on Wall Street?
Economic indicators.
Who knows where this is going to end up?
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
How you doing there? It's David. A filthy day in Dublin. The waves coming in over Dunleary Pier. Extraordinary. Easterly wind, John, my friend. Easterly wind.
Always the chilliest.
They're always the chilliest. The waves are brilliant out there. Has been an amazing week, John. What's going on in America in financial markets? Our Patreon site is coming down with people saying, please tell us what's going on. What's your take on this? This is the most significant disruption of financial markets that I have ever witnessed. And I've been playing this game for a long time.
But even compared to 2008?
Oh, yes. Because 2008 was the establishment against itself. This is a pitchfork revolution on the internet against the establishment. Okay? And it's fascinating. Look, I've been through the currency crisis in Ireland, 1992.
Yeah.
The Asian crisis, the Russian crisis, the dot-com crisis, the 2008 crisis.
Don't forget your middle-age crisis.
Oh, we're going right through that at the moment. We're going right through that at the moment, right? But all these things, John, pale into insignificance compared to what's happening here.
Really?
Because all those things, and we can go through them, all those events were very typical financial booms and busts, okay, that went along a path. And we can go all the way back.
Probably, you know, more predictable in a certain kind of way.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, you go back to speculation comes from the Roman word speculare, which means to watch out.
Yeah.
Because the speculators, and they were in the forum. They were in the forum. There was in AD 33, do you know, under the reign of Tiberius, there was an extraordinary banking and land collapse in Rome.
Was there?
Okay, and Tiberius, who was an unusually long-standing emperor, came in and bailed out wealthy people. This
really,
yeah.
He did a bailout.
He bailed out all the equestrian class, the patrician class, all this great stuff. I can tell you about it all. And the reason I'm telling you this is these things happen all the time. Like everyone says, good God, did you see The Big Short? That is extraordinarily unique. No, it's not. It happens all the time, right? Going all the way back, right?
Yeah,
to Tiberius, 33 AD. But what he did then was he was the emperor and he had to bail out from the Roman treasury the landed class.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, he took a few scalps. In fact,
go on.
People who speculated against him, think about this, and they were involved in a coup against him under the guise of this financial crash. He chopped their heads off and he put them on spikes in the Tiber River, which was named after him. And the Tiber River is the one that goes straight through Rome.
Yeah.
So you don't want to mess with Tiberius?
You don't want to mess with...
But what do you make of this week then? Because you've been watching it too.
No, you see, the thing is, I made a conscious effort this week to stay off news. I just didn't want to hear any
news. Your post-Trump fallout.
I'm coming down off Trump.
I know you were, exactly.
I find it difficult. But I decided I wasn't going to watch any news because all it was is, you know, COVID stuff and vaccine stuff. And I'm kind of tired of it all.
And the EU making a total hames of the vaccine thing.
Yes, indeed.
We might even touch on that. Go on.
But I couldn't help noticing this kind of little bleeping alarm about GameStop and Reddit. And I was going, what the hell is all that about? I wasn't getting it at all.
It's a huge story, John.
See, I don't really understand the market. I love all the economics, but I don't really understand the financial markets in the same way. So I think...
See, this is what the establishment want you to think, that it's all very complicated.
But in actual fact,
it's all very simple.
Yeah.
Right? So why don't we do this week, right? Because again, as I said, on Twitter, on Patreon, lots of people saying, lads, do this for the podcast. So let's break this podcast down, John, to three bits, right?
Yeah.
First bit, we're going to talk to Avalon Penrose from the States, who was the comedian who did that amazing
Twitter
thing, right?
Yeah.
Then we're going to talk to Katie Martin. Katie Martin is the brilliant editor of Financial Markets for the FT.
Sounds like a humdinger to me.
And then we broaden out and explain in the historical context or the political context what's going on. So we do that.
Well, we have a listen to her first.
Have a listen. This is Avalon Penrose's take on GameStop.
So I have been seeing a lot of people online who are like, what is going on with the stock market? Is there anyone who can explain this in normal person terms? And so I decided I want to do that because, like, I own stocks. So I, like, have a pretty good understanding of the stock market. And from what I understand, there are these people who are... they have lots of money and they have hedges around their house and they go to the market, but it's like not a real market. It's a it's metaphorical, but it's real. And they go, that company is not doing well. So I'm going to make it do worse. So they pull out some papers and they go, who wants to make a deal? They start making deals and they say, if this company's good, if it goes down, then I get money from you. And if it goes up, then I'll give you money. But they don't tell you that it's not going to go up. I mean, they will make it so it goes down. But then there was this online reading club that was like, well, not today. We want hedges too. And so they went into their bank accounts and then they also went to the market and they were like, bye, bye, bye of the company. And changed it a lot. And so now the initial people, the hedges have to give their hedges, I think, to the other people. So yeah, if you have any questions, just let me know.
Now, that is perfect.
That's fantastic.
And let's go to LA. We don't say that every day, John.
Yeah.
And talk to Avalon Penrose herself. Avalon, how are you?
You know, I'm doing very well. I can't say I know any more today than I knew 2 days ago, but I feel great in terms of my own life.
Tell me. Look, so you put this thing up. You're sitting in your car. What possessed you, number one, to put this up?
So it's because I truly had no idea what was happening. I was on Twitter and I was scrolling through and I decided I wanted to try to understand from a real authentic point of view. I was like really desperate to know what was going on because I had no idea. So I went and I started watching real, you know, explainers, people who work in economics. And I was like, nope, that's not doing it for me. I don't understand that. And I kept trying and I realized that I could probably explain it better than half the people I saw online if I just tried. And I realized shortly after that I really couldn't. And then I was just like, I'm just going to keep trying. And I tend to do this character a lot who's like very overconfident about things that she shouldn't be confident about, but like slowly falls into a panic.
That was the beauty. You know, that's the beauty. There is a thing, actually, we've done it before on the podcast, called the Dunning-Kruger syndrome, whereas the truly incompetent overestimate their competence and make glorious mistakes. By the way, I think Boris Johnson falls into that, but we can talk about him in a second. Right? And it was a great example. But tell me how the reaction to it. You're hanging out with fucking Elon Musk at this stage. Tell me more.
So I had 5,000 followers on Twitter. And so to me, that was insane. Like the fact that I even had that many, I was like, seeing that the normal people who were reacting to my Twitter were reacting to it. And then suddenly I just started noticing it was getting picked up a little bit more. And I was like, oh, this is weird. Why on earth is anyone watching this? And then it just exploded. And I got messages from my aunt being like, a man whose book is on my coffee table just retweeted your tweet. And then I had people who I haven't spoken to since middle school reach out being like, Avalon, remember how we used to be super good friends?
Oh, I love it. Fun I love see. It.
You know, and then, of course, the Elon Musk situation happened, and I was like, what?
So tell us, Avalon, what happened with this Elon Musk thing?
So I for the most part, the reaction was positive. People got the joke, you know, people understood it. And then all of a sudden, I started getting personal messages being like, who do you think you are? Like, you don't know anything about finances. Like, and then people commenting, not getting the joke. And I was like, oh, God, who introduced this crowd? Turns out it was Elon Musk, who somehow found the video. And I have no idea how it got on his radar. And he commented. And I just thought he commented and made a joke. And I was like, it was an okay joke. You know, it was fine. But I was like, I don't want to entertain your jokes on my tweet. So I made, you know, kind of a rude comment back. But it was just for fun, because I thought it would be hilarious to outsmart or to pretend that I believed I was smarter than Elon Musk, because I am.
Clearly. So, well, I'm with you on that one.
So, yeah. And then it just, you know, it continued. He responded again. And hopefully I'm going to get a free pair of shorts out of it.
You might get a free trip to space out of it. So if you keep going like that.
Go to space, get a Tesla, you know, move in with them.
Really
or whatever.
Try to milk that. Just milk it a little bit, you know. Don't agree with 90% of his statements, but he's, you know, great. Yeah. I'm happy that we overlapped in this one interaction on the internet.
Nah, it's been extraordinary because I think it's 15 million views. But Katie, what I want to talk about is, you know, Avalon was actually asking the real questions, you know, what the hell is going on? So can we use you as our muse, Katie, to tell us, to inspire us and be the knowledge, you know, the person of all knowledge? Avalon, what's the first question that came into your head? What was going through your mind when you think actually something big is going on here?
I mean, the true first question I had was, what on earth is a hedge fund and what power do they hold? Because I truly have no idea.
Katie Martin, tell me, what is a hedge fund?
So there's various different types of what we call institutional investors and kind of the real money out there, the people who look after your savings account or your mutual fund or your pension or whatever it is. And there's all sorts of different kind of investors out there. There are big insurance companies, there are pension companies, there are just standalone investment companies. And then you have this kind of whole chunk of investors that are called hedge funds. And they tend to be at the kind of swashbuckling end of the market. The irony of the fact that they're called hedge funds is that a lot of them don't hedge. So they go into bets that can be like really ambitious and dramatic. And if they come off, great. And if they don't, well, you know, who cares? So the idea is that they kind of go into risky bets or kind of really sophisticated little arbitrage strategies that other investors won't touch.
We've got to go back here. So when I was laughing at Avalon's hedge fund, she said, well, I think these people have hedges. And that's where
around the house.
Right. A lot of them do have hedges.
What is big hedges around big houses?
But they make them look like animals and stuff. but really, all you need to know for the purposes of this is that they tend to be quite kind of punchy, ambitious, kind of, like I say, swashbuckling investors. And in this particular instance, they are what we call short sellers. And so a lot of investors kind of spend their days looking around for companies that they think are going to be worth more in the future. And the idea is that you invest in the companies when they're tiny and you hope that when they're massive, you've made loads of money out of it. Short sellers do the opposite. They kind of scour around looking for companies where they think this stock is too expensive. This company is rubbish. It's going to fall. I'm going to bet on the share price falling. And these are the guys who are kind of some of the punchier hedge funds out there, and they have been properly schooled over the past week. And it's been something I've never seen before. It's quite extraordinary what's happened to them.
So come on, explain to me, how are they schooled?
So there's been this really big uptick in what we call retail investing, particularly in the States. So these are just ordinary people who have no formal training in the markets, a lot of them. They're sitting at home, they're bored out of their minds. A lot of them are normally fans of like betting on sports and stuff that isn't really happening at the moment. They've got spare cash because no one can go out anymore because everything is boring and terrible. And in fact, a lot of them have got stimulus checks that's basically free money that they don't urgently need. Some people need that money urgently, some people don't. And at the same time, you've got a bunch of trading platforms out there, of which Robinhood is probably the best known example, but there's loads of them out there. And they have just over the past few years cut their fees to basically nothing. So pretty much anybody who fancies it can play around in the stock market, whether they know anything about what they're doing or not. And in this particular instance, they've got cash that they can afford to lose. And so they're feeling pretty good about the world. They're happy to take on quite punchy bets. In addition to that, they're able to play around in what we call the options market. So that means that you can basically supercharge your bets on certain companies. So the third kind of magic ingredient that's in the mix here is that all of these traders are getting together on message boards like the Reddit Wall Street Bets group. So I started writing a story about this yesterday, and at the time it had 2.8 million users. And by the time I finished writing the article, that message board had 3.1 million users.
It's like Avalon's Twitter account.
It's almost as successful as Avalon's Twitter account. So this thing has gone nuts. And what the guys do on these message boards, and you know, the language they use on them wouldn't be out of place down in the docks. You know, it's pretty spicy, it's pretty punchy. There's loads of swearing, there's loads of pejorative language. Some of it, I'm afraid, is just funny. It just is.
Of course it is.
But a lot of it is sort of terrible. And what they do in amongst all this kind of stupid banter about memes and stuff is talk about what stocks they want to buy. Now, if you were an investment banker or one of the kind of established investors that we were talking about, sharing information with other established investors about what stocks you were going to buy, chances are you'd go to jail for it. You'd certainly get fired. But these guys are sharing all their ideas in this huge pot and coordinating together. So there's a few kind of companies that they really love, and there are companies that they really love that are the target of these short sellers. So you've got kind of Harry Hedge Fund on the one side saying, ah, oh, this company is a bucket of crap, I'm going to bet against it. And the Redditors basically rose up like a week or so ago and said, no, not having it. Why don't you like GameStop? Now, you know, 10 days ago, I had never heard of GameStop in my life, ever, not once.
Are you serious?
Avalon will know better than me what this company is. It's like, it sells like consoles and video games and kind of general nerd equipment.
Avalon?
Yes. GameStop? Okay, I'll give you my GameStop knowledge. So from what I've known my whole life, you go there if you want to buy you want to buy used video games for discounted prices, but you can also sell your games there. But one time I found like 80 video games in a dumpster, and I went to GameStop, and I was like, I'm gonna make a fortune. I never tried to sell a game, but I was like, I have 80 Xbox video games. And I made like $18. And so I think that that goes to show that the company, you know, they weren't buying back gems all the time. And they didn't have a lot of money to give toward their buybacks. But basically, that's why the gaming community loved it, is because you could get store credit if you turn in your old video game and put it toward a new video game.
Right. So Harry Hedge Fund has come to the conclusion that shops, you know, retailers whose business model is predicated on people finding video games in dumpsters is not sustainable in 2021 when games are online and the whole thing is different and this is just not something the world needs, and they want to, you know, bet that this company is going to go bankrupt.
That's their bet.
Potentially, but certainly that the shares are worth less than they were trading.
Before we talk about this, Avalon, you know gaming because you are a character in a game. Is this true?
It is true. I am. I voice act, and so I have been in this video game that kind of took off recently. But I love it, and it's kind of funny because I think there's a big overlap between the community of people that play the game I'm a voice in and the community of people that would sabotage, you know, Wall Street from Reddit, because it's an indie game. It's an indie community that's obsessed with like supporting the gaming industry and loving these indie darlings of the world. And GameStop is kind of becoming like a little indie love place where people go there because they have games that you might not find anywhere else or things like that. So
normally you can't find games anywhere else because they're rubbish. So this is kind of like what the hedge fund, like certain hedge funds were betting, you know, that this stock is going down. So the Redditors all kind of ganged up and said, not on our watch. And they bought the hell out of the stock.
These are Avalon's mates said, okay, I've
all my friends. All their mates. I punched forward the movement. I was like, you guys go grab up all the stocks you can.
So they did that. They used their free trading apps and they used their ability that's only been around since quite recently to play around in the options market to fire this stock to the moon. Together, they got together and they did it. And so like just over a week ago, one of the kind of short sellers, it's called Citron Research, Citron Capital.
Citron, no research, clearly.
Well, they're pretty, you know, they're not one of the biggest short sellers in town, but they're pretty well known. They've been around for quite a while. And they said, you know, okay, we've lost. We didn't see this coming. All of our negative bets on this company have been completely wiped out, and we're never going to say anything about GameStop ever again. And so the Redditor guys, and they are overwhelmingly guys, were like, they had got a scalp. They'd actually like taken out a hedge fund, and there were other hedge funds that had gone down as well, and they were just delighted with this. It worked. So when the following week started, they just kept sending GameStop shares just higher and higher and higher and higher, like hundreds of percent. But they also just went roaming around the market. So there are people in this Redditor group, some of them know literally nothing. Some of them clearly understand how markets work, because you can, if you know where to look for it, you can find out which hedge funds have negative bets on which companies. And they went around looking for companies that have got lots of what you call short positions on them, lots of negative bets on them. And they bought the hell out of them. And they've just basically made this entire strategy for hedge funds of betting against companies either completely unsustainable, some of them have just stopped doing it altogether, like Citron, or significantly more risky. And so hedge funds were just forced to buy back all the stuff that they'd previously been selling, basically unwind all of these negative bets. So there are just companies dotted around the US and around Europe that their share prices just kicked higher this week because the short sellers are just saying, I can't win in a war against these Redditors who I barely even knew existed a week ago. It's amazing.
Katie, can I just ask you, do we know who is coordinating these Reddit guys? Who's the main leader?
Avalon was, clearly.
I think it was me.
So there are kind of some personalities, shall we say, that lots of people coalesce around. Am I allowed to swear on your program?
Absolutely.
I tell you the funny thing. First of all, this is a Dublin-based podcast, so you know the way we speak. Number one, and number two, we are not going to genuflect and cede to the Redditors and the swamp that you discuss. Of course, go for it.
So there's one guy on Reddit who goes by the username Deep Fucking Value.
Okay.
And
I thought you were going to say something much weirder, but anyway.
No, could be worse. They've all got terrible handles. The FT got sworn at in quite spicy terms this week by someone who goes by the name of Space Hitler on Reddit.
Oh, nice. So,
there was another guy, Steampunk 75.
Yeah, they've all got stupid names, right? So there are certain people who are like big personalities on the platform, but a lot of it is really genuinely a kind of organic movement. There's millions of these people and they kind of, you know, coalesce into little groups, and it's incredibly impressive what they've managed to achieve. Now, the whole thing has got Wall Street absolutely on the run. Like, they didn't see this coming and they thought, okay, we've kind of been looking down our nose for years at these little guys punting around in markets, thinking they're kind of irrelevant passengers and they basically win or lose as a result of whatever we do. This is the first time they've ever had a really big impact all on their own. And at that point, it's like, okay, what happens now? Because there is a school of thought that these guys are going to lose their shirt. And it's going to be horrible. And they've got their college savings in this. They've got their parents' savings in this. When GameStop crashes back down to earth, which some people think it inevitably will, then, you know, this is going to be horrible for them. We have a duty of care to make sure that these people understand what they're getting into. Now, a lot of the Redditors are saying, screw you. I don't want protecting from anything. There's a lot of money to be made out of this. This is a public market. Who the hell are you to tell me that I can't trade this stuff? And both sets of people are right.
Listen, Avalon, what's the mood like in the States? Because again, I mean, you know, we're obviously over here in Ireland and Katie's in London, but America has a much bigger culture of buying stocks and Wall Street and all that sort of stuff. What's the sense over there?
So I literally just about 30 minutes before this call received a phone call from a friend that was like, hey, dude, like, I've been getting a lot of phone calls being like, I saw your video. But this person's first thing was like, hey, dude, did you actually buy stock? And I was like, I have like three. And he was like, no, but did you buy GameStop? And I was like, oh, no, I had no idea how, like, I would even do that, truly. I was just like, no, I just was talking about it. And he's like, okay, because I've been, like, really trying to understand, like, how it's going to go. Because I bought 9 stocks last week in GameStop. And then and then he starts, like, going on his investment journey. And he's like, and then someone was like, dude, you need to get out because it's going to crash. And he's like, so I sold 5 of them just so I can make back my initial investment. And then he goes, but it kept going up. So then I bought more. And I was like, what? And apparently there's, like, a cap that you can only buy 5. And people are mad at that because that's the protection you're talking about, Katie, where if you buy too many, they're scared that something bad will happen to you. But apparently this one guy a year ago predicted that GameStop was going to take off, and he bought $46,000 of GameStop stock.
Wow.
And he showed his portfolio, and now I think he has $44 million.
It's incredible. This is a life-changing event for a lot of these people.
And so it's a brilliant event for lots of people.
It's fantastic for a lot of them. So some of them, you know, obviously we've been writing a lot about this over the past few days. Some of them are not in it for the politics. They're just out to make a little bit of money. And some of them are saying, the fact that I've stuck it to the man is the icing on the cake here. I've made a bit of cash and I've screwed over some hedge fund billionaire somewhere, and I could not be happier about that combination. And who are we to begrudge that funny note? It's a bit rich for the Wall Street types to be kind of suddenly worrying about the kind of access these people have to public markets when they're winning. When the retail guys are losing, which they almost always do, it's like the first rule of kind of, you know, big grown-up finance is retail's always wrong, always do whatever the opposite of what retail is doing. You can't have it both ways. So, you know, you've got to let them make the money when it's their turn to make the money. So just the mere fact that there are so many retail traders in the market at the moment has been taken by a lot of people as evidence, or as at least as a big indication that markets are going to crash pretty soon, because they've been sailing higher for the longest time, particularly since we got through the kind of, there was a pretty big crash around the time that the coronavirus thing broke out, and then we've just sailed higher ever since. And people have been saying, oh, markets are getting too high, we're not comfortable. Also, oh, look, the retail guys are in. If that doesn't tell you it's about to crash, nothing is. Turns out
the retail guys knew.
Turns out the retail guys were onto something. And what really kind of, so now the hedge funds that have spent years and years saying, oh, these retail guys know nothing, they're like getting clever algos to scrape through Reddit and try and find out in kind of machine learning fashion what these guys are doing, what sort of bets they're going to put on next. All of a sudden, they're taking them super seriously. It's quite a moment, and it's not going to go away, because pretty soon, Americans are going to get a new set of stimulus checks. And for a lot of these people, that's going to, again, be like top-up money that they don't need to survive. That's going to go straight into the stock market. And why wouldn't you? It's worked. Why wouldn't you try and double your money?
And Avalon will be sitting in her car waiting to do the next Twitter vid.
Oh, yes. I've had people be like, please do Bitcoin next.
Ooh, that would be good. Yeah.
And the reality is, I also own Bitcoin and also have no idea what it is or how it works. I've had it for 4 years. I've never bought. I've never sold. I just plopped some money in there 4 years ago. I was like, let's see how this goes.
Well, you should be doing quite well at the moment then, are you?
Actually, the drinks are on you. You're buying the drinks.
I know. I actually tried to log into my Coinbase, and then I didn't know my password, and I was like, well, guess I'll check it again some other time. And, you know, I checked it like 2 years ago, and I had $25 from my initial $50 investment, and I'm pretty sure now it's like $100. So, you know, I'm not talking big numbers here. I like to do it for the fun of the game.
And you've doubled your money in the fun of the game.
I've doubled my money.
This is great.
If only I had put a little more in at the
Listen, this has been hilarious, but also very instructive, very instructive, very incisive. John is off now on his Robin Hood.
I'm on me Robin Hood at the moment.
Yeah, Robin Hood, who's apparently, wasn't he Robin from the rich to give to the poor?
And yes. Little John.
So Little John, it's all symmetrical. Listen, that was really good. Thank you both very much. And what are we going to do, John? We're going to invest, or we're going to divest, or we're going to divest.
We missed the Bitcoin, so I think we've missed this one as well.
Okay, listen, guys, thanks so much. See ya.
Thank
you.
Bye.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Do you know what's brilliant? The one thing I did see during the week, the one organization got possibly the biggest bounce was the Worldwide Association of Robin Hood in Nottingham. To the point that they tweeted out going, thanks very much, but you know we're not the Robin Hood.
Well, the interesting thing about Robin Hood, as we know, John, is that Robin Hood was stealing from the rich to give
indeed
to the poor.
Was. Apparently.
Apparently. And now, of course, there's been a huge amount of backlash against Robin Hood, the platform. But again, it's a fascinating, fascinating story. Katie is right. She said she's never seen anything like this, and nor have I.
Okay, can you just fill in a couple of gaps for me?
Yeah.
She mentioned things like options, and they were able to buy options that supercharged their bets. What does that mean? And, and actually, maybe bring it back a little bit.
Well, you know, like I worked on one of these prop trading desks. What
you were one of those bastards.
No, on the contrary. On the contrary, I was. But an actual fact, and I can tell you, psychologically, John, I worked with a lot of these traders, and most of these prop trading desks in the old days, proprietary trading, so you're trading the bank's money, right?
Yeah.
And they have an economist, and the economist's job is to try and as much as you can call the big calls. Where's the currency going to go? Where's the bond market going to go? Where's the stock market going to go? And then the traders...
And you're looking at a lot of geopolitics as well,
We're doing the big geopolitics. Then we'd sit in the traders and we'd say, look, we think interest rates are going up. And they'd say, okay, are you sure? And I'd say, well, look, you know, we're not 100% sure. But they'd say, okay, then they figure out a trading strategy based on that macro view.
Yeah.
That's how we used to work, right? And when she talks about options, there's two options markets. There's called a call option and a put option, right?
Right.
And one is an option to buy something in the future, and the other is an option to sell something in the future, right?
Okay.
So short selling is what we're talking about now.
Yeah.
And short selling is the following, John. What happens is you borrow stock from a stockbroker. Okay? This is the first part of the trade. So let's go down the various trades. Let's use AIB shares and pretend AIB shares are worth €1.
Okay.
So you go to a broker and you say, I would like to borrow AIB shares from you for 3 months and I'll pay you back in 3 months.
Yeah. Right?
That's the first trade.
Yeah.
And we're assuming that AIB shares are worth €1 each today. So therefore, so you say, I want 100 shares. So you have borrowed 100 AIB shares from that broker. That's equivalent to €100.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's keep it that simple.
Okay.
Right? The broker then goes and buys those shares from somebody else.
Gotcha.
In order to have them.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's the first part of the trade. Second part of the trade is you're hoping that AIB shares fall, right?
Yeah.
Now think about if AIB shares fall in 3 months to 50 cent, then you can go into the market, buy back 100 AIB shares for €50.
Yeah.
And you pocket the 50 quid, the difference, and you give them back to the broker.
Right. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. That's the short selling, right? Now, the reason this is incredibly risky.
Yeah. It's just creating money out of nothing.
Well, A, it's creating money out of nothing. Okay. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
But the reason it's incredibly risky is the following, right? If you invest in AIB, not the options, right?
Yeah.
Not your calls and your puts and your promises to buy and sell and all that. If you say, I want 100 quid of AIB shares, right? Your downside is limited to 100 quid. So if AIB shares go to zero, you've lost 100 quid.
Right.
But look what happens in the short, and this is the short squeeze. So think about, again, what's happening. You're the short seller.
Mm.
You're hoping that AIB shares fall to 50 cents. Then you can trouser the €50 difference between the 100 and the 50. So you're happy, right? But what happens if AIB shares go the other way? So you originally bet €100 on your option. If they go to 500, you've lost €600. So in the original case, when you're not using options, the only money you can lose, whether your bet is right or wrong, going up or down, is the amount of money you've put in.
So,
but if you go on the options, your limit to actually what your loss is infinite.
Right. So you can't wait around for it to drop back
well,
down again.
Well, you can, but it costs you a lot of money. Because then you've got to pay something called margin.
Right.
So margin is, so think about the broker lent you something.
Yeah.
He's going to, like anyone who lends anybody else money, he's going to charge for that.
Yeah.
Like an interest rate. I'll lend you money, I'll charge an interest rate. It's called margin, right? So you've got to pay a little tiny percent all the time to the broker for the pleasure of this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So the hedge fund guys, right? And they are big swinging dicks. I mean, I've worked with lots of them. I can tell you, deeply unhappy people, most of them. Right?
Really?
Some of the traders, great laugh, right? There
yeah.
was a sort of a Cockney trader who I used to play football with and I used to really get on with them.
Yeah.
A type, right?
Yeah.
But there's also quite unusual people who's just so obsessed by the markets and la la la. But so think about the short seller. So the short seller said, now GameStop, as Avalon said, is a dumpster company, right?
Yeah.
There's one up here on the street in Dunleary, right? Okay. And my kids used to be out all the time exchanging things, right? So all the short, all the sort of big swinging dicks said that company is a dag. It's going to nothing, right? So they shorted it, right? The short squeeze is when the other guys, the retail guys, start buying the stock. So imagine the dynamic. We're talking about AIB.
Yeah.
I think it was GameStop now. The dynamic now is the GameStop share price is going up and up and up. The short seller is dependent on it going down and down and down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And suddenly, the short seller, to close the position, has to go and buy GameStop shares in the market, which has the effect of pushing the share up even further.
Yeah, yeah,
and that's
yeah.
the squeeze.
Right,
so that's what
gotcha,
and
gotcha.
Imagine
yeah.
by the bollocks.
Yeah.
That's the squeeze, right? And it's like, oh, Jesus, right? Okay. So what happens is, in order for the short seller to get out of the shit position he's in, he has to squeeze his own testicles.
Right.
Okay? Why? Because he needs to buy the stock back in the market. And the more he buys to cover his short, the more the price goes up. And that's where the hedge funds went bust.
So this is a casino.
It is a complete casino, right? Shrouded in nonsense economics, research reports, perceptions of views on the Fed, but at its core, right?
Yeah.
The financial market. So if you think about, John, originally stock markets were set up as a form of borrowing for a company. So a company can borrow in three ways, right?
Mm.
You can issue a bond, which is basically saying, I'm going to issue a long-term piece of debt. We're going to back that by the company and we're going to borrow from the world in this way. You can go to a bank, you can borrow money. Or you can issue stock and you can say, you give me 100 quid and I'll give you a bit of my company.
Yeah.
Right. So that's all it is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So in the first place, the financial markets were a way for companies to raise money if they couldn't get it somewhere else, right?
Yeah.
That's gone years and years ago. So the idea that the financial markets are in some way essential to the lubrication of the capitalist economy, complete bullshit, right? They have become a self-serving casino for the hyper-wealthy. Which is why the hedge fund guys, and hedge funds come in years and years ago. Probably the first one was a quantum hedge fund, which is started by a guy called George Soros.
Yeah.
And then they've had many imitators. Now it's amazing. You know those hedge funds you hear, like $5 billion hedge fund went bust yesterday?
Yeah.
They're two a penny. They are two a penny. There's loads of them. It's amazing when you think of them, particularly working out of a place called Greenwich, Connecticut, which is where apparently most of the hedge fund dudes.
Why? Why live. There?
I have no idea, but that's where they like to hang.
Right.
Maybe there's some sort of tax chicanery going on, right? But, you know, nobody is going to shed any tear for a master of the universe that gets hosed by his own greed.
Yeah.
Right?
No, this is real stick it to the man, wasn't it?
That's what Katie said.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I love that.
So that's the short selling. Now, the interesting thing is hedge funds give you the, I love the way Avalon said they have like hedges.
Yeah.
Right? And it was
like
funny.
Totally.
It's funny because Elon Musk, who responded to Avalon's tweet, came out and said, you know, shouldn't be called hedge funds. They should be called shrub funds. The hedges are gone, right?
Yeah.
But the idea is that you think because they're called hedge funds that they're hedging their bets.
Yeah.
That basically they take one bet here and they have a corresponding other bet down here.
Yeah.
So I'll give you a great example. So if the stock market rises, it's because the economy is doing really well and the economy is booming, right? What normally should happen in that situation is the bond market should do quite badly.
Okay.
Because the bond market's afraid of inflation.
Right.
Right. So consequently, if you're taking a long bet on the stock market, you can take a corresponding bet on the bond market, which means that if you're wrong on the stocks, the bonds go up. And if you're right on the bonds, the stocks go up. So you actually hedged.
Okay. Right? Gotcha.
So that's what the hedge funds. They used to have these hedges. Now they don't bother. Now they don't hedge at all. They just take these massive bets.
Why?
In one Because the downside, all these guys have taken 100 million quid in fees out of these things anyway. So it doesn't matter.
It's just a little game.
It's a little game for them. It's a little game for them, and it keeps the price of property up in New York and swanky limo companies things and, you know, swanky restaurants or whatever.
There's a great scene in The Big Short where they're describing how these trades ripple out. People are putting their own bets between themselves on other trades.
A really good way of thinking is, do you remember when in gambling, when we were kids, right?
Mm.
You could gamble on horses or gamble on a football match.
Yeah.
Right, to win or lose. Now you can gamble on who gets the first corner, right?
Yes.
Who takes the first throw in.
Yeah.
So it's more esoteric. It's the same thing in financial markets. It started with this reasonably pure idea, and now it's just, you can gamble on anything, right? But the most important thing is this is a moment of profound disruption because the market used to be owned by the insiders.
Yeah.
And now this is an outsider revolution facilitated by technology, by information, by different platforms.
So are you saying this is the end of the traditional trading of Wall Street
definitely
and
short
London City and stuff?
It's definitely the end of a type of short selling. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
There's also...
It's not a bad thing, though, is it?
It's not a bad thing. Although, you know, I think, you know, if a company is spoofing to investors, that is one thing, and in actual fact, it's another, the idea that you have a way of punishing that company is probably a good idea. So if a company like... Take some bullshit company like Anglo-Irish Bank.
Yeah.
And it's bullshitting to everybody that's a big bank, but we know it's going bust.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a bad thing that people could short that company.
But there again, on the other hand, the guys who are shorting a stock, they could get the old PR machine cranked up and bad-mouthing a stock and saying it's going to go down. So it does. So people start believing that.
I think you're absolutely right that the world will not be made a worse place for the lack of short sellers in the overall thing.
Yeah.
But think about what's happening with the Robin Hood revolution. What they are doing, it's a morality tale for them. They're basically saying, you guys have loads of money. We're the outsiders. We've nothing. Because of the options, when we talk about the options, that you pay a little premium in order to play, it means that you can actually get into the game for really cheap because you never have to put your big money down.
Okay.
You only put your little option down, right? So you can buy 100 shares of GameStop for, let's say, a dollar. Your option is the dollar.
Right.
So, so that's why Katie was saying these are really, you can put really big bets down with small amounts of cash. So suddenly what you get is a strange situation where the geezer at home who's got his... game on one. What's the game JM plays? What do you play, JM?
Hades,
right? You know, he's playing his Hades, right? He's got his two screens at home. He's playing his Hades and he's got his Reddit guy. He's got three screens. He's got his crazy Reddit guys talking to him, whatever, and he's got his broker account open, right? Yeah. So that
he's
geezer,
got voices in his head
he's got
as well,
voices
I believe.
In his head, right? Yeah. He's a millennial dude, right? That geezer can actually play the game that used to be the preserve of Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
And, and what you find is that most of the hedge fund people are refugees from the big banks, from the big merchant banks, the big investment banks where they learn their trade. They all talk to each other. It's lots of backslapping, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now the peasants have broken through the ramparts and have got into the game. And the interesting thing is the Occupy Wall Street movement, right, which was a huge movement, missed a big trick. You know, outside Goldman Sachs, they don't care about that. But fucking them on a trade, they really care about it.
Yeah.
So in fact, this is Occupy Wall Street from the inside.
Yeah.
And that is a fascinating thing because now Wall Street realize we don't own the game anymore. We're not in control anymore.
So this is classic Schumpeter again.
This is perfect Schumpeter. And Schumpeter is always about the disruptive moment where technology and culture come together to change the game. Now, if you think the battle here is between insiders and outsiders.
Yeah.
Between millennials and boomers, because millennials in America feel, look, you guys have all the money.
Mm.
We have nothing. Between young and old. So this is an extremely interesting moment. And when I look at it, John, and I look at what's going on around, and I look at all the other sort of mass movements that are emerging up, right?
Yeah.
This is the movement of the era where people look inside the big house and they say, you know what? I want some of that shit too.
So this is the democratization of the financial markets.
This is the ventilation of the financial markets. Now, interesting, John, on Thursday, we're going to talk to Eric Lonergan, who himself is a hedge fund manager.
Right. Excellent.
And Mark Blythe, to put the sort of political context, you know, where is this in the big scheme of things? But for this podcast, I think we should be sufficient that we're seeing something really new and it ain't going away.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.